korkun korku trap sonsun. Trap sonsun trap donsun. Түүний сонсдог хөгжим дур булаа. Дадаж дуудан дур булаа мууруулаа.
MMA Roasted Podcast. We got a great show. We have my man McCorkle is back.
What's up, buddy?
My man Shang is back. Lean Dog is back. We got a great show. We were just talking before the show about, like, you know, it's funny because I say this all the time. You know, when I coach wrestling, there's so many kids like, I'm not really feeling it today. I'm not feeling it. I don't feel good. And I tell kids, like, you know, when I coach, hey, it's not about when you're feeling good. It's about when you don't want to be there. That's the difference. Right. And then with comedy, it's not about the hot crowd. Almost anybody can kill in front of a hot crowd, like a hot, hot crowd. It's when you're up there and the first 5 minutes, nobody is laughing. Nobody's laughing. And then you got to do 45. Or like I said, like there was a time when my mom passed away, I had a show the next night. And I was like, you know what? This is what my mom would have wanted, and this is what I have to do. And that's really, like, it's not about when you're feeling good and you have to perform. It's when you're feeling awful. McCorkle, did you have that when you were fighting? Like, there were days you just came out of bed, you're like, this is going to be a terrible fight, but you have to kind of
every time I hate it. I hate fighting. I hate everything about it except the stuff that comes with it. But every time walking out of the cage, I said, this is my last time, never again. I don't care how much they pay me. It's not worth it. It's not worth the stress. I was never afraid of getting hurt. I was always afraid of getting embarrassed. That was my biggest thing. I think it's cool as comedians, though, you guys can look up to, you know, older, more seasoned comedians. Like, think about, you know, not just 5 minutes where no one's laughing. Think about 45 minutes where no one's laughs, and you still continue on, like Brendan Schaub. early. But no, I hated it. Yeah, I hated fighting. Hated everything about
it. That was coming.
Do you have, like, is it like, are you like Ray Finkel and Ace Ventura, and Brendan Schaub is like where you're going to kidnap him and like.
Yeah, no, Brendan Schaub is like my Carol Baskin if I was that Tiger King guy or whatever his name is.
Dude, yeah.
Speaking of which, by the way, I know this is the fight podcast, but Carol Baskin is going to be on the new Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah. I was wondering what star she's going to dance with.
I mean, first, yeah, right. Like, she killed her husband. I mean, allegedly, I'm pretty sure she killed her husband and fed him to the tigers.
To the tigers, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, so they announced it. I actually wrote it down. It's Nelly, who's like a legit star. Didn't you open for Nelly, Shang?
No.
Oh, the Ruben Pope. It's AJ McLean, who's the Backstreet, but one of the Backstreet Boys. I mean, imagine he's on a show now with Carol Baskin. Charles Oakley, who's one of my favorite Knicks of all time. That guy was a monster. Anne Hesch, who's a brilliant actress. Jesse Metcalf, Johnny Weir, who's going to win. I mean, that guy is like a legit Olympian gold medalist. I think he's an ice skater, right? But, and Carol Baskin, like, how did this?
That's embarrassing. If I was on a comedy show with Carol Baskin, I'd go, I'm gonna pass. I don't want to. I'm not, you know, I'm not a big time, but I'm not there.
I was just glad when I saw that announcement. I was glad that whatever injury Nelly suffered many years ago that caused him to wear a Band-Aid for 10 years finally healed. Like, I was just glad that whatever that was on his face finally is better. So.
Dude, now
that was such a weird look at the time, like wearing Band-Aids.
Didn't he have like multiple sexual allegations against him? I felt like the only thing I heard about him was like women.
No, that was Mystical.
No, it wasn't Nelly. I'm pretty sure it was Nelly too.
He went to jail. He went to jail for it.
No, I think Nelly was like, he was accused, but then he just admitted he was just cheating. But he didn't rape the girl. I don't know what exactly happened, but anyway.
It's music artists. That's what they do. I mean, and if you're, you know.
Wait, you mean like they rape or they get accused of? Or
they get accused of stuff or you could be. Or
how would you guys like to, you know, you're talking about AJ McLean. How would you like to, like, I always dreamed of being like a music executive so I can make this call. Like, I could call up a boy band member and be like, good news, bad news for you, Johnny. Good news is you're in the boy band. You made it. He's like, all right. I'm like, the bad news is you're the ugly one. I don't know. Every group
has always the streetwise one, the one that's streetwise.
Right. Yeah. Like you're Joe or what's his name? Joe Knight, not Jordan Knight. You're the ugly.
The ugly one usually is the best singer. All right, so let's talk about fighting. So it got announced yesterday that in December, December 12th, I think, that's usually when they have their big event. It used to be on New Year's, but they moved it earlier. Masvidal versus Diaz rematch.
I am mad at it.
And for the baddest motherfucker. And then Burns Usman for the belt. I have a couple issues with this. The Masvidal-Diaz first one wasn't even close. It was a mismatch. I mean, Masvidal was kind of beating the shit out of Nate Diaz. And I'm a Nate Diaz fan. I wanted Nate to win.
But he was killing him. And his eye would have got worse. He would have continued to bleed like a stuck pig. And he was losing. He was absolutely losing.
So why are we doing this, McCorkle?
For pay-per-view sales. That's what I think. It's strictly about that. And plus, it's win-win for the UFC. They make a ton of money. If Masvidal wins, he's back in title contention. If Diaz wins, he's set up to fight Conor McGregor. You know, there's any number of ways they can go. But they like to do that. UFC likes to take two guys coming off losses and put them together. That way, at least, you know, one guy is coming off a win then, you know.
But no,
the way they match it. So
one came off – I wouldn't say Masvidal came off a loss, but it was with a week's notice. And I wouldn't give that – I wouldn't put that in the same category as Diaz. Diaz flat-out lost. Flat-out got his ass beat.
Although the fight was stopped – I think with the third or the fourth, and Nate Diaz does come back a lot.
Yeah, but I mean they would have stopped it anyway. The cut was horrendous. Did you see it? It was like a flap of skin.
I had no problem with the stop. The only problem with the stoppage was that Nate didn't want to stop it. If the guy doesn't want to stop it, usually I'm just like, let him go. But it didn't look like it wasn't competitive, really. I don't know about this one. I'm gonna root for Diaz. I hope he wins. You never count Diaz out of the fight.
I don't think he's gonna win.
It's just a matter of why are we – Joe, thoughts?
I like the rematch, dude. You know, I love Nate Diaz, and he does – I feel like he doesn't really train for his opponents. He just trains, you know what I'm saying? Like, he doesn't really give a shit how his opponent fights. So I think in the second fight, he has to take into consideration that Masvidal is a crazy starter in these fights. He likes to charge and just throw everything he has from the get-go. So I think the biggest takeaway that Nate has to come up with is, you know, be cautious in the first round, you know, don't get caught. Just expect Masvidal to come charging at you. And if he is smart in that first and second round, I think he will be able to make the fight last longer and prevent any serious damage to his face and prevent any cuts. And I think he could be able to go to a decision.
No. He wasn't checking kicks. He was getting hit constantly. I mean, constantly. Diaz was not. It was kind of an ass beating from beginning till they stopped it. And I think Masvidal would have baptized him eventually. I mean, it looked bad.
I honestly think that that Leon Edwards, he's complaining about it. I think he has a legitimate gripe because he should be fighting Masvidal next. They got to fight backstage. Remember he gave him that three-piece with a combo?
Yeah, and three-piece and a soda.
It's a big money fight for Leon. It's a big profile fight. And Leon gets passed over a lot. It seems like he gets overlooked, and he's a good fighter. I don't know what it is. He gets hurt or something. He pulls out of fights.
He doesn't have any – there's nothing about him that it makes you want to, like, pay-per-view watch it.
The only fight that's marketable for him is the Masvidal fight because of their altercation. But other than that, I wouldn't care to watch him fight ever again. You know, like, that's the only thing. I don't know. He's just not – he doesn't stand out like Shank said, you know, just kind of just another guy to me. So,
Diaz and Masvidal are kind of street motherfuckers, and that's what makes you want to see him fight. But I still think Diaz, I don't know, Diaz didn't look to me like, and I love Diaz. He's like,
yeah, but you know, Joe has a point though. Diaz might have overlooked him. He was coming off a win over Pettis, and now he might take him more seriously. And Diaz doesn't like to lose, he hates, he's been talking shit on Twitter the whole time.
I think Masvidal was gassed after the third, and if it had continued, if the cut hadn't stopped it, I think Diaz probably would have won the fourth and fifth. He was still lost by decision because it wasn't even close, the first three.
Yeah.
But it would have been more competitive, I think, fourth and fifth. I don't think if Usman can't finish an out-of-shape Masvidal, Diaz wasn't coming back and finishing him, you know? So there was no – I mean, he was going to lose 3-2 even if he won the last two, maybe even, you know, a 10-8 round on one of those first three. But I don't know. I mean, they can put another belt on the line. I bet Usman is – freaking out because here he is defending his belt, but he doesn't get to keep the BMF belt, and it's going to be contested on maybe the same card, you know? So it'd be like,
dude, the first time I met Diaz, I was at a club in Vegas, and he was standing there with Nick, and they just looked like two pit bulls, like guarding a porch, you know, like just mad dogging everybody, right? So I'm like kind of trying to avoid eye contact because I'm like, what fucking jokes did I make about this guy? Like, I don't want to. So we make eye contact, and he smiles. He goes, "What's up, man?" He goes, "Come here." And he's like, "Man, you're funny and fucking, you want to come train with me tomorrow?" I'm like, "I'm good about that, but thanks, yeah, man." And he's like, so he's like, "Yeah, man." And we're talking about fighting, and the guy was so nice, right? And then Nick walks by, and I go, "Hey, Nick." And Nick just keeps walking. And Nate looks at me, he goes, "Don't worry, he doesn't talk to me either." And I was like, fucking like. And then we took a picture together, right? We took a picture, and Nate smiled, right, in the picture. Then he goes, "Hold on, let's take it again." And then the second picture, he was pissed. It was like he got mad that he smiled in a picture. You know, like, like most people want to smile, and that's the, like he was the opposite. Like if he smiles, he's like, "Oh, let me take that." Like he can't smile, but
what I was gonna say, I think Usman is not that. That's a good fight. Don't give me him and Burns, and I think Burns is gonna take it to him. But Usman's a monster. But I'm gonna tell you right now, the fight I'd want to see out of the two, even though I think it's going to be a wash, is Masvidal and Diaz. It has more draw than Usman. And I think Usman doesn't have – like that last fight, it wouldn't have been as big if it wasn't for Masvidal.
Yeah, no.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And people were saying, hating on me. I put it on Twitter. I said, Masvidal may have lost, but he won. Because money-wise, I heard that he got chipped off.
Yeah, but he still lost. I mean, he was on such a tear – with his flying knee against Askren and his running.
That was crazy.
Yeah. He was looking like the next big thing. He was. So him looking kind of normal still was a loss for him.
I agree.
Money-wise, I get it. But you have to understand that, like, fighters aren't – the fans aren't gonna take that into consideration. They're not going to be like, "Oh, you fought on a week notice." They're just going to remember him – you know, kind of hit a
board. I think they will take the week notice. I think the week's notice will be taken into account.
But like you said, I do think that Gilbert Burns is going to beat Usman. I think that they trained together, and he kept calling him out. Burns kept calling him out. And I think when you call out the guy you train with, you know something. And I think that Burns just he's in that zone right now. I think – I don't know if Usman shit got to his head or he's parting or he's taking a victory lap. But I just think Burns wants it. He's hungrier, and I think he's peaking right now. And I think Gilbert's got this. Sean.
Yeah.
I would say so, man, partially because I always root against Usman. But, no, Burns, when he just beat – I can't remember his name. Who did Burns fight last?
Woodley.
Oh, yeah. The way he looked against Woodley, man, like that – and Woodley's faded a little bit, but Woodley's still Tyron Woodley, you know, and the way Burns looked, I think he'll take it to Usman. I think he'll be in his face and pressure him and make him fight. And hopefully Usman can't just, you know, dry hump him for five rounds. I'm hoping that's not what happens, but I'm going Burns too, just voting with my heart anyway.
But he actually took down Woodley too. I mean, he beat him wrestling, and he's a jiu-jitsu guy. Shang.
I say Burns is going to win. And I think that he is just as strong as Usman. Usman's a strong motherfucker. They said he got gorilla strength, but so does Burns. And when Burns gets you down, it's hard to get up.
Yeah,
he's a beast. So I just – and not that I dislike Usman. I just don't think Usman can hang with that. I don't know what that – you know when you can tell one person really fucking needs it and the other person's like, "Yeah, I got it. Whatever." And the other person's like, "I fucking need this."
It does seem like Burns is more of a killer instinct than
yes. Yeah, that's yes.
It does seem like Usman is kind of content with winning.
Right.
Where Burns wants to finish you. Ween Dog.
I definitely think Burns, out of all the top contenders in the 170-pound division, I think Burns probably has the best chances to beat Kamaru Usman. I just really worry about Burns' gas tank. Because this is like very similar to when Marlon Moraes went to go fight Henry Cejudo. Marlon had all this hype, But then he got in there and he gassed out after like the first round, and then he just got destroyed by the wrestler. So I'm very cautious, you know, when I pick Gilbert in this fight. I do think he could win. I think he might win, but it's Kamaru Usman, dude. You know,
he also
this
gets guy really, just, Burns gets really fat too. I mean,
yeah,
he,
so,
I
mean, he look gets, at his brother. Look at his brother. His brother's fight. He gassed out in like 20 seconds, you know?
Yeah. Now, by the way, so Woodley posted a video of him and Masvidal training for Colby Covington. So I guess he probably figures, you know, Masvidal is Colby's ex-teammate. He knows how to beat him. Woodley's like, I think that's only going to just fuel Colby. I know, I mean, not that he needs fuel. I mean, but McCorkle, how much does training with somebody's old training partner help you?
I mean, they may be able to give you a little insight, but I think both those guys have fought so many times. You got so much film on them, you know, whatever, you know what they're going to do. And with that, when I think Colby will win. Colby, I think, would have beat Usman if he hadn't gassed. That's the first time I've ever seen Colby gas in my life. Normally, he's like Cain Velasquez, like he set a pace that nobody can fight at, but he was tired before Usman was in that fight, and I think that really was the difference, you know, in the fight.
Really?
You
don't think that fucking, you know, punch to the grill was the one? You don't think he started teeing off on him.
Colby looked gassed to me after the second, and that's
he
the
said
real,
he
real,
said he had food, real. He said he had food poisoning the night before. And
oh, get like, the fuck out of here.
Dude, hey, it's a, like, I'm just telling you what he said. He said he was not, he said he thinks he was poisoned the night before.
look at Ween's face like, yeah, right. No, he just lost, man.
First of all, he was 1 minute away from winning.
No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was.
No, he wasn't.
Look at the scorecards. One guy.
Okay, it was close, but then you could see, you know what? He did start, when he started gassing, he started taking more damage.
Dang,
then
dang,
once
dang,
he hit him, dang, he knocked dang, him down.
Dang, facts don't care about your feelings. Okay, so.
No, fuck your feelings.
All right, look at
right.
The scorecard. One judge had Colby winning. One judge had Usman winning. One judge had an even. Okay, so that's going into the fifth round. The first 2 minutes of the fifth round, you could argue it was close enough. You could say Colby was winning. Then he got caught, and then it was over, right? So I think it was that he was about a minute away from winning. I think it was 3 minutes. It was really, like, late into the fifth round.
It was late into the fifth round. Right.
So I'm just saying that he probably – if he would have not got caught, he might have won that fight. He probably would have won that fight.
So I wonder why they didn't give a rematch to him. That would have been a good fight, a rematch to him and Usman, because it was such a good fight and it was so close. Why wouldn't they say, hey, let's run it back and let them go at it again and give Colby a chance?
They were talking about it. I know for a fact they were.
Oh, okay.
They were talking about it, and they were trying to make it July 4th weekend. Like, they were talking about making it during fight weekend. There was a lot of talk going back and forth, according to Colby. And I know he was trying to wait one out. He wasn't doing himself any favors, I think, a lot of times. I think he was injured. He had some injuries, and Usman had some injuries. And I don't know. I know that if Colby beats Woodley, I think that they're going to make that the next fight for Colby.
Woodley's motivated. I think Colby's motivated, but Woodley kind of got to win this one. So I think he has that fire under his ass. And I know that Woodley seemed – from the both fights, he seems like he has so much more power than Colby. Like,
I think that Woodley,
like, he hits harder.
I do.
Woodley has more power.
Oh, he totally has more power. I do worry that Woodley might overtrain for this. I think he might want it so much he might overtrain. Like, I don't know. Like, McCorkle, who do you think wins, Woodley or Colby?
I just think Colby, because I think Woodley's old, man. Like, not really in years, but old. Agent. A lot of times you see those guys, man, they start, even not that Cormier is not so great, but those guys, once they lose a couple, man, or once they start to that slide, you get old fast, man. And it's Whitley, I've lost money betting on him his last couple fights, like, because I thought when he's healthy and in shape like he was, you know, a few years ago or whatever, Woodley's one of the best I've ever seen at 170, man. Like, he was, you can't out wrestle him, you can't out box him, you couldn't anything, you know, nobody. And even Masvidal said that. I saw Masvidal in an interview say, you know, Woodley 3 years ago when he was in shape and not injured was the best he's ever seen at 170, you know? It's tough to do, but I think, Colby, just by being younger and the way Woodley's looked, I think he got to go with Colby.
I can't wait. That's probably the I'm most excited about that fight than anything else.
Me too.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because I mean, they genuinely hate each other, and they're two guys in the top five. How many times do we see two guys in the top five that really hate each other?
I'm more hyped to see Masvidal and Diaz.
Yeah, I'm talking about like in the next month though. I'm not talking about
close. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Now, according to so Brian Ortega is fighting the Korean Zombie, right? According to so this is a fight where Ortega punched Zombie's interpreter. He went at a fight. He punched him during a fight. They had to get broken up. The guy was a Korean rapper. According to Brian Ortega, talk shit, get hit. That's where I come from. Diaz brothers aren't the only ones from a city where if you act a certain way, you get slapped. As much as you grow and try to learn things, do better, sometimes it comes out, and it came out. Do you agree with that philosophy, Shang?
Completely. I do. I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, as Willie Marcina. No, I'm just saying. I mean, I just think that Brian Ortega is one of the coolest motherfuckers. And if you push him to that point, you know that you did some silly shit.
He slapped a rapper, a Korean. He didn't slap Ortega.
I know. What I'm saying is, he just seems like he's not just not that type of dude. But, I mean, other than, you know, the Frankie Edgar fight, I just think that Korean Zombie's going to have some problems. He's going to have some problems.
Sean.
I don't know, man. I was just shocked when Ortega got beat by Max Holloway the way he did, because I thought Ortega was like the guy of the future. He showed unbelievable toughness, but I'm all for people getting slapped when they get out of line. Like, I think the world needs a lot more of that. I really am. I was a little surprised, though. I heard the rapper that got hit said the whole thing was just ridiculous. So, I don't know. I thought it was, out of control. But I'm all for with people. I think the world needs far more of that and far less prosecutions of acts like that. So.
I just wish it was Psy, the Gangnam Style guy. I mean, if you're going to slap a Korean Zombie, how do you not go against that guy, right? I mean, that seems
right.
Like... So, Dana White is open to John Jones fighting Brock Lesnar.
Hell yeah, dude.
That fight...
Oh, stop it, Queen.
That fight moves the needles. Lots of needles right there.
That was hilarious.
Tony Ferguson said he wants to help train Brock. That could be the worst idea. Brock will be injured in 8 seconds. He'll have him doing some kind of... on a unicycle... fucking bench pressing, you know.
Juggling bowling ball pins.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the guy you want to train. Tony Ferguson has to be like the worst train, best fighter, terrible workout. Only he can do what he can do. Now, everyone seems to think that John Jones is going to run through Brock Lesnar if they fight. I think so too, but... Fuck, I mean, I thought Mark Hunt was going to fucking destroy Brock Lesnar. I'm like, he's going to fucking jab him. Brock's going to fall down. And Brock showed me a lot in that fight. A lot. Wins this fight? Sean McCorkle, talk to me, man.
I think Jones easily if they fight. Because if Dan Cormier couldn't take down Jones, Brock Lesnar's not taking down Jones. And he for sure won't stand with him. But I don't think there's any way he passes the steroid test with USADA. I don't care who he's got working for him. And I think Brock is just trolling everybody to get a bigger WWE deal. He does it all the time. Every time his contract is up, he's going back to the UFC allegedly until they pay him what he wants. So I think that's his move. But I would love to see it. But I don't see any way he passes the drug test, especially being on the radar. Failing last time, and if he does, he definitely. I mean, if he can go a 4 month period, because that's the only reason they grandfathered him in last time, let him in, was because they knew he couldn't pass a drug test. You know, like otherwise they could do special exceptions under the rules. That's why he didn't have to pass 4 months of tests. But no way he makes it through 4 months of tests. And if he does, he doesn't look like he looks today. I'll tell you that.
Oh, I think it's the biggest bullshit in the world that Jones is gonna fight him. It is bullshit. I think he should fight Stipe. If you're going to fucking act like you're going to be a beast, go against Stipe.
Well, he wants Stipe. He wants, huh? Jones wants to fight Stipe.
But then fight Stipe. Fucking Brock Lesnar, you know, only way Brock Lesnar fights is if they got some duct tape to hide the horse tail he's grown from all the fucking roids he takes. Get out of here. Fuck him. I'm seriously. He's a fuck him. I do not like him. I am so glad Frank Mir almost broke his fucking leg.
The second fight, he broke Frank Mir's face.
Like, I know, but the first one. I'm not talking about the second one. I was just glad that
the second one counts. I mean, nobody cares about the first one. No offense. Brock was like a month into training. He wasn't even he just went in there. The second one was the funniest you've ever seen because Frank Mir was like, and I love Frank Mir, but he's like, man, I've forgotten some jiu-jitsu moves that Brock has. My jiu-jitsu is so advanced that Brock is blah, blah, blah. And Brock put him in a schoolyard headlock and just went.
And just start pounding him. I know. But Frank Mir, I know, because I think that one, it should be a good big payday for Stipe. He deserves it. He deserves it. He's arguably the best heavyweight. He's defended the title. I think he deserves the payday more than Brock. I think he will give Jones more problems than Brock will.
Of course.
And it'll be a better fight. So why would you want to see a subpar fight with a roided out fucking
I don't
want
to. I only want to see it because the buildup will be hilarious.
You just want to see it for the...
but the actual fight itself is going to be a letdown. But
yeah.
I'll get excited to watch. Every time Brock walked to the cage, I would get something about that guy. He has that star quality.
Would you guys rather see Brock Lesnar versus Francis Ngannou? I feel like that'd be a little bit more fair, dude.
No, that would be Francis would cough and Brock would run out of the fucking octagon.
I'd love to see John Jones and Ngannou. That's the fight I would probably like to see most of.
Really?
Yeah, because Jones is obviously a better fighter, but Ngannou just has to touch it. It's only once, so I would love to see that fight.
Now, who do you think wins, Brock Lesnar that in UFC 100 that beat Frank Mir? Or the best version of John Jones, before diverticulitis, Brock Lesnar versus John Jones.
Still John Jones. Brock doesn't like getting hit. If he can't take you down, you saw with Cain Velasquez, he couldn't hold him down, couldn't keep him down. And Cain's not great standing up, but he just pieced him up after that when they fought. I was actually there about five rows up, live. But I bet on that and made a ton of money because everybody kept saying, "Oh, Brock gonna run right through him." I was like, "He can't. He's not gonna be able to hold Cain down." I was like, "Once they start standing, Brock, as soon as he gets hit, watch against Shane Carwin. First time he gets touched." He runs away with his hands over his face, like running the opposite direction. It's just I know someone that trains with him all the time. You'd probably be able to figure it out by someone I'm friends with. But someone trains with said Brock, they told him, they paid him $2,000 a week to go spar with Brock and said, hey, Brock doesn't like getting hit, so go about 30%. And he's like, well, that's not going to do Brock any good. It was Pat Barry, okay?
Yeah. But,
Pat Barry said, it's not going to do Brock any good. I'll get hit 30%. He said, well, he doesn't like getting hit. He goes, well, he's going to get hit in a fight. So, and he was trying to explain to him, you got to take some shots, get used to it. And so then Brock just comes in and mauls him, and he can only go 30% to keep him off of him. And he's like, man, I can't keep him off me at 30%. You know, I got to sting him a little bit. And they're like, no, just we're paying you. Just go easy on him. And it shows when he fights, man. Like, I would love to spar if people can only go 30%. That'd be amazing. I'd spar every day.
Have you ever trained with Brock or no?
No, just met him one time. He wasn't nearly as big as I thought he was. Of course, I'm a giant, but he was probably about 6'3", man. He wasn't as big as I thought he was. I mean, muscular dude, bigger dude, but not the monster you see on TV. Not to me, anyway. So I was a little surprised. But I've heard both ways. I've heard he's the nice guy in the world, and I've heard he's the biggest prick in the world from different people. So
yeah, but he still doesn't deserve. I mean, out of the two, he doesn't deserve the shot as much as Stipe does.
He doesn't.
So why? Fuck it. Give the people the better fight.
Of course.
Not the fucking sideshow fight, because that's a sideshow fight. Compared to a Stipe and Jones. That's a real fucking real fight. I think Brock Lesnar is the sideshow fight, and that's why I don't know.
You're gonna watch it though, right?
Fuck yeah.
Oh yeah, go watch it.
Okay, yeah, you're right. I don't know.
Talk about pro wrestling. Somebody was talking trash about Stone Cold Steve Austin the other day, and I told him, hey, listen, no matter what, you gotta respect the fact that guy would pretend fight anybody, anywhere, anytime. So.
That's true.
I don't know.
So speaking of real fighters, we got Justin James here. Justin James, who's an awesome fighter. He took his first fight in the UFC on 3 days' notice and knocked out Frank Camacho. What were you, 5-1 underdog? 6-1?
I think the best line I found was plus 325 or something. You know, it was a big dog, but, you know, as I start throwing these hands, man, I'm never a dog when I'm throwing hands.
Did you bet on? Yeah. You actually bet on yourself or no?
No, I didn't. I don't. I try not to bet because then I'll be even more bummed out if I lose.
Your next fight, also against a stud. You almost won. You that guy. You were so close. That first round, you hit him with an uppercut. That, and then how close were you to finishing that guillotine? Talk to me.
I hit him with the uppercut, and I knew he was dazed. And when he gave me his neck, I snatched in that guillotine, man, and that was so tight. You know, I'd like to say, you know, I'm good at a couple things, but I'm really good at the guillotine choke, man. And that was arguably one of the tightest guillotines I've ever had in competition. Honestly, Adam, you know, it had his pants not fallen down. I'm not making an excuse, but you know, if you watch the fight, I have my guard locked around like his waistline, right on his pant line. And his pants fell down, which caused me to lose the choke and lose my leverage in my position, man. Gavin's a Renzo Gracie black belt, dude, the freaking stud. I heard him gurgling. I thought he was going to go to sleep. And next thing I know, you know, I was in danger for the last 20 seconds of the fight. He transitioned beautiful from the guillotine to side choke. It was a crazy fight, man. He's a tough, tough dude. And, I wish him the best in his future, man. But, just to get out of that guillotine is tough for him.
You think the pants fell out on purpose?
The funny is that there's been times that we always joke around about, you know, pulling our opponent's pants down in the fight, you know. But so ESPN came around, and I was the first fight to pull someone's pants down. So let's go.
Wow. No, I'm saying, do you think that he knew he was about to choke, so he actually got his pants out on purpose to get out of there?
No, I don't think so. Just the way my guard was latched around his waistline, it just, you know, they just happened to slide down. You know, he had the Reebok spandex shorts on under, which is a slick material, and it just slid down, man. It was just a weird situation, you know. It kind of ruined my night, but it is what it is, man. Like I said, Gavin's a tough dude, and he survived the storm, dude. I gave him everything.
Well, listen, man, I'm super proud of you. I mean, You've been around for a while. You grew up in Michigan. Yep. You were a wrestler. You fought in all kinds of promotions. You were in Bellator. You were on a 6-fight win streak. I mean, you've been around. Did you think to yourself, like, man, maybe this is not going to happen, this whole UFC dream?
Dude, man, it's you know, this year was kind of a depressing year. You know, I fought James Warfield last year. It was May 31st of last year or May 30th or something like that. And, you know, my manager's like, all right, you're in, dude, you're in. You know, we'll have you fighting by the end of the year. And then 2020 came, and I still don't have a fight, still don't have a contract. January comes, nothing. February comes, nothing. March comes, COVID hits. Now I'm super depressed. I'm kicked out of the gym because, you know, the gym shut down because of COVID. I don't have any income at all. I'm fucking crying like a little bitch. I find out they had a fallout for Austin Hubbard, and then my teammate Max Raxkoff gets the call. Puts me even more depression. Days later, Jason calls and said, you want to fight tomorrow? I said, bet, let's go.
Wow, good for you. That was amazing. Now your first fight, you went out guns blazing. Did you know you only had one round of gas tank in you and you were just like, fuck it?
You know, I know a lot of people said that, but you know, this whole COVID, you know, I've been training hard, man, and I've been keeping my weight low. I was ready to go three rounds. I have no really interest in wrestling. I knew what Frank was going to bring to the table. I knew it was going to be a phone booth style kind of fight. I figured we'd just touch elbows and both of us just swing punches and try and get fight of the night. Sure as shit, I was lucky to, you know, land two left hooks right in a row, barely missed with an overhand, and was able to sit him down and go in for the finish.
Well, I was gonna
say something, man. You had, from that head clash, you had one of the worst cuts, and you just fucking kept going. Oh, yeah, yeah, man. It's looking good, though.
Yeah,
man,
that's good.
No, I have seen some cuts, and I was like, what the fuck? And you still just kept just like, okay, I'm cut. Let's go. And that was the one thing, because I looked at it. I watched a bunch of your fights. I was like, that was the one where I was like, this dude really is going for it. Because you got, I mean, it was like, pow, and you went, all right, let's go, buddy. And you just kept going. So, yeah. It looks good, though. It's healed up.
I think it's healed up pretty good. And, you know, what a lot of people don't understand, you know, especially in the MMA community, you know, I've been doing this since 2007. Everything I worked for since 2007, I was a high school wrestler 2007, started my first MMA competition 2007. So, for the last 13 years, I had been working towards this exact moment, a short notice fight against a well-known guy. It was Frank's seventh fight in the UFC. I literally, you know, I see a lot of guys, they fight not to win, or excuse me, they fight not to lose. I went in there guns blazing, and there was nothing there. You know, Khabib wouldn't have stopped me that night. I was on point. I was in shape, And I was throwing heavy hands, man. That was 13 years of work put into 41 seconds. So, you know, I at that point, I didn't feel anybody could stop me at that night.
That's awesome. Now, Max Rock, you talk about Max. Max is a buddy of mine, and I felt so bad when, you know, what happened with him and his coach. He's the guy that, like, he quit on himself. He quit. Coach said, no, come back in. I understand why the coach did that. I think that's a good coach right there. I would have done the same thing if I was his coach. He's been cut from the UFC, which I think is unfortunate because the kid's a legit stud wrestler, great at jiu-jitsu, great fighter, and I think he's got a huge career ahead of him. I still do. How's he doing? Have you talked to him? What's going on with him?
You know, I saw right after I fought, I talked to him for a couple minutes. He wished me congratulations, and I haven't seen or heard from him since June 20th, man. You know, I was really worried about him. You know, his mental, you know, capacity, because I knew he got a lot of flack for what happened. You know, I know Max. I train with Max. And, you know, I wish I could tell you something. He's such a tough guy and you know, Division I collegiate wrestler. He comes into the gym. He just rolls through everybody. He's arguably one of the best, if not the best grappler in the gym. And, there had to be an underlying issue. You know, I'm sure thousands of people literally have reached out to him to figure it out. So I didn't want to be one of those guys, but knowing Max, knowing how tough and strong he is, there had to be something else. There had to be something else going on. And he's competed at the top of the level in one-on-one competition. Division I wrestling is arguably to me the hardest sport in the whole world. And for him to compete there, and then, you know, there had to be something, man. I haven't talked to him. I haven't trained with him since. I hope he's doing all right.
Now you're one of the coaches over at Extreme Couture. Are you Ngannou's coach?
Yeah, I'm his training partner. I'm his number one sparring partner.
Are you really?
No. We train. He's a teammate, man. It's Francis is a great guy. Very quiet. Very humble. Comes into the gym. Doesn't talk too much to a lot of people, I should say. Eric Nixick, I believe, is his head coach right now. And you know, I'm just slowly getting back to the gym now since I fought Gavin. And I haven't seen Francis this week. I'm going to go in probably an hour or so. And he might be there, he might not, but super cool, super humble guy.
I heard that, like, he doesn't know how to go light, though. Like, his going light is knocking people out cold by accident. Like, he's actually not trying to do it. Is that true?
I would believe so. I don't know. I've been fortunate enough to never feel, any of his punches. But just look at his size alone, man. If his 100% can decapitate me, his 50% can still put me in the hospital. So, you know, when you're talking about a guy with those kind of attributes, that kind of strength, that kind of size, he's probably going light and he's still fucking guys up, man. It's like, I don't want to be on one of those kicks or one of those, I'll tell you that.
McCorkle, we have the great Sean McCorkle here, the guy who submitted Mark Hunt in 1 minute. Any questions for the great Justin James?
I don't know, man. How about, do you, I always wanted to always ask other fighters, do you dread it as much as I dreaded an hour before the fight? Like, do you sit there and question every life decision you've made up to that point right before you fight and decide you don't want to do it and think I'm not doing this, I can't believe this, and dear God, please don't let me get embarrassed. Like, I don't care if I break both arms, both legs, just I want to win and not be embarrassed. I'm curious if anybody else goes through that or if it's just me.
Well, I'll be honest and say that happens every fucking time. Except the Frank Camacho fight. The Frank Camacho fight, you know, when I was warming up, leading up to going from the residence inn where they put us to the Performance Institute or the Apex, on the way there, I was like, what the fuck? For me, everything happened so fast. You know, my manager called me Wednesday night. I had medicals all day Thursday. I had 5 different doctor appointments on Thursday. I started cutting weight about 10 p.m. Thursday night. I got on weight about 6 a.m. and then I weighed in. So that whole time, I didn't really have time to comprehend what was going on. I thought it was a dream. I've dreamt about the moment for so long. I really didn't know how to feel about it. Everything just happened too quick. Starting my warm-up, I'm like, what the fuck's going to happen? I'm fighting Frank Camacho. This guy's fought in the UFC 7 times. I'm probably going to get knocked out. And then, you know, I start warming up. As I start getting a sweat going, I just remember feeling that feeling of invincibility, and I started cracking the mitts, and I was like, damn, I can punch through these fucking walls right now. And then, you know, obviously 40 seconds later, I came on top. But to answer your question, dude, every time, especially through training camp, you know, it's just like wrestling. You have good days and bad days. I get my ass whipped, you know, by some guys on the regional circuits, like, what the fuck am I doing? You know, or even amateurs, you know, there's a couple times during my training camp to 145. And mind you, I've never fought or I've never made weight at 145. Like, I got subbed by an amateur in a couple of my sessions. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm supposed to be you know, competing in the best organization in the world, sub by an amateur, what the fuck am I doing here right now? So, again, back to your question, it doubts the whole way, but you know what? Cream rises to the top in all situations. You know, even if I take a couple losses, eventually I'm going to be at the top and I'm going to be knocking people out next fight.
Ween Dog, any questions for the great Justin James?
No, man, I'm a big fan. I look forward to watching your future fights, dude. That's pretty much it.
Right. Thanks, man. I really appreciate you. And right now, you know, I'm trying to jump back in as quick as possible. You know, 145 is it's a very tough weight cut for me. I walk around about 170, 175, and this short notice 3 week stuff is tough for 45. But as I told Sean, as I told Dana, I'm always ready at 155. I can be on weight in 2 days. But if they want me to go back down 145, I need minimum 6 weeks. And I genuinely think that was the biggest factor fighting Gavin Tucker. I just didn't have the gas to go along with it with such a hard weight cut. But I appreciate your guys' support, Adam. You know, I've always, you know, supported you through the years and so on and so forth. And I appreciate the reciprocation having me on.
100%, man. Well, where can people find you?
Justin James MMA on Twitter, JAY09MI on Instagram, or just Justin James on Facebook, man. And again, I appreciate all the support I get.
Thank you, brother. Take care.
Hey, you guys have a good day, all right?
Thank you.
Nice guy. And I'm telling you, man, a lot of people, like you said, you know, you get scared ahead of time and you question everything. But I don't know. I feel like that goes away. It's even when, if you're a comic, or even when like back in the 1900s when I actually liked getting punched in the face. No, was it the 1800s when I used to like to get punched in the face? Now don't punch me in the face. But I think that you once you start feeling good, you say, yeah, it's on. And I feel like way with comedy, I don't get nervous. As soon as I get on stage, I'm fine.
I love to always find once the fight started, I was good. It was just leading up to it. It's like, it's funny because like 5 hours before, you're like, I just want to get it over with, man. I don't want to think about this anymore. And then the 20, 30 minutes before, it's like, no, it's coming too fast. I'm not ready. Like, you don't want to go out. But the only time I wasn't like that for whatever reason was when I fought Mark Hunt, my first fight in UFC. I think because it was all so surreal. The whole thing didn't even seem like – I remember walking out there and looking across the cage, and I was like, dude, you're getting ready to fight Mark Hunt in the UFC in your hometown in front of 20,000 people. And I just fought at a bar 3 months earlier in front of like 100 people, you know. And I was always like, Mark Hunt was one of my favorite fighters. It was so surreal, man. And then I thought, if I get knocked out, what do people expect? So there was like no pressure at all. But I was positive. That was the only fight I was ever 100% positive I was going to win, and I don't have any idea why. I just believed it. Yeah. It was like God told me or something. I was like, because I'd gotten divorced, had a lot of really terrible stuff, lost all my money, went from being a millionaire to having nothing all in the previous year. So it was like, I just believed that God would bring along this opportunity just to kick me in the balls again, you know? And so I was like convinced I was going to beat him. And even when he was piecing me up at first, I was like, that's all right, I'm going to submit you anyway. But then, the next fight I had against Stefan Struve, I was convinced I was going to lose. I don't know why, but I was convinced I was going to lose, and sure enough.
Now, the Mark Hunt fight, that was the same card as Congo Pat Barry, right?
No, it was the same. It was main event was Crow Cop and Frank Mir. Mitrione fought Joey Beltran. Chris Lytle fought Matt Serra, but I don't remember who the co-main event was. But no, I was the first fight of the night. It was funny. Came out in Indianapolis, the first UFC ever here, so the entire place was packed. And they told us we had to get right in the cage. They said repeatedly, listen, you have to get it. We're on a tight schedule, immediately in cage. But as I walked up the stairs, I thought, I'm probably only going to get one chance to do this. So I stopped and turned and walked about 10 steps around half the cage and put my arms out to the crowd and made everyone cheer for me for like 25 seconds. I just sat there with everybody cheering for me or whatever. And they ended up liking it. But I was afraid they were going to be mad about it. Yeah, but I was like, oh, well, this will be the one time I ever get to do this. So
How much pussy? I remember me and you, we used to fight on Twitter all the time. As we became friends.
Yeah.
And then you texted me and you said, hey, man, if you ever come out to Indiana, I know every hot chick in Indiana.
I did. There's only like seven of them, so it works out.
And you're like, I will get you laid so fast. Trust me. Come out and stay with me. And I was like, I love this guy. So after that night, right, that night you just beat Mark Hunt. Are you just – was it threesomes, foursomes? Was it
– No, dude. I went home that night, and I went to the after party for a little while, and everybody was being real weird, treating me different, even people I knew, like all hugging me and all over me. It was real weird. So I left and went home, and then I had – when I got – I looked, I had like 12,000 Facebook friend requests. like immediately, and all of a sudden I had like 40,000 followers on Twitter, and then I was on the front page UFC.com the next day.
Wow.
And then I didn't like being, it actually scared me a little bit how fast everything changed. Like my life changed literally overnight. Everybody was treating me different. I had all kind of interview, like the, you know, the local newspapers, local TV wanted to talk to me, and everybody, I mean, just inbox filled with messages from girls, even girls that I had asked out before that turned me down. We're trying to, like, you know, like, hey, we should hang out sometime. I'm like, hey, remember this? And I sent them a picture of when I asked them to hang out and they didn't want to. I was like, no, thanks. I've upgraded, you know? But everybody got weird, man. I had people, like, everybody, no one offered me anything, just asking for things. Like, everybody I've ever known, hey, I'd love to corner you to your next fight. Like, dude, I haven't seen you since sixth grade. Now you're asking me for something. Hey, can you give me tickets to your next fight? Like, sure. Why don't I put you on the list of people I want to do something for? You know, yeah, so I mean, I get messages.
Fast forward to your last fight when you said I was the only one to text you, keep your head up, man.
Yeah, yeah. The only one I heard from. Yeah. The only one at all I heard from. I didn't hear it before or after. It's like it didn't even happen, which the fight barely happened anyway. I was in such terrible condition. I never should have fought that fight. But I beat the dude in 30 seconds at Bellator. So I figured – like, he was 275 when we weighed in at Bellator. I figured it would be no – I mean, I knew I couldn't train. My back was hurt, but I was like, I'll submit this dude quick. I beat him so fast at Bellator. He comes in at 232 with abs. Like, he said – he tells me before the fight, yeah, man, I knew this was pretty much my last chance, so I moved to American Top Team. I just trained for the last 16 weeks for this fight. You know, whatever. I got the best shape of my life. I was like, awesome, because I haven't trained even once because my back is so bad.
You couldn't walk part of the diner. I'm not kidding. You were like – you literally couldn't walk.
Yeah.
Block. And you're like, I'm fighting in 3 days. I was trying to talk you out of it. But what I'm trying to say is that when people that like, they realize it's not, you can't get too wrapped up in, people love you when you're winning. It's like Bill Burr used to do a bit back a long time ago about how, like, when you run how Los Angeles and women and all these people, it's like you run a marathon by yourself. And then at the end, everyone's waiting for you to cross the finish line, going, "We did it! We did it!" And like, right. "We did it!" Like, where the fuck were you the last 27 miles?
Right, dude. This is the honest truth. I probably never even told anybody this. When I lost to Stefan Struve, I had so many people turn on me. People I know even treat me different. Like friends of mine act different to me because I lost to one of the best fighters in the world. You know what I mean, or whatever. And so I completely lost all desire to ever fight again after that fight. I didn't want it anymore. I didn't want to be a part of this. I was like, it's my first loss ever. And when I saw how everyone turned on me, I was like, fuck you guys, man. Like everybody, you know what I mean, or whatever. I was like, I had hundreds of messages. Yeah, fuck you, piece of shit. That's what you get. Like, I'm like, what am I, Brendan Schaub? Come on. But I was getting hate from everybody, and I was like, I fought bad and I got beat up. But I mean, isn't that punishment enough that I lost the money and got beat up?
It's so part of the million. I always tell people, they're like, hey, any advice to I want to do my own podcast or I want to do a – I go, yeah, man, be there for the fighters when they lose. There's always going to be a loser every fight. And everyone jumps on the winner. But the loser also gave his fucking shot. And also, that dude's going to win again. And he's going to remember that you weren't there for you, or a lot of guys don't, you know. But that's fucking Hollywood in a nutshell. Shang, at one point, I mean, you're obviously one of my favorite comics, and you're a beast on stage. At one point, you had deal after deal after deal. I remember, I mean, you had a one-man show, Shangri, I think it was on Broadway. And you were getting write-ups from, like, Spike Lee and stuff. And people, like, were coming to you. I mean, did you notice the difference of people that were on your dick when you were, quote-unquote, maybe hotter than versus when you weren't?
No, I think that when I got sick, I could tell when I got real sick. From my kidneys, and I could tell when people started acting differently, like, oh, well, he can't do none of that shit now, he's sick. And that's when I started weeding people out and people that were not about it. And I didn't get mad at them. I know how that is. I mean, when, you know, even when I would look at comics that I knew for years, when they change up on me, and I'd be like, dude, I know you. I pulled your head out of a fucking toilet in Fort Wayne. So yeah, don't even, yeah. I know you. And then now you're acting goofy with me. But I have a tendency to pull them to the side and check them. I'll pull them to the side and go, yo, motherfucker, first off, violence can happen at any moment. A lot of these dudes ain't about it. No, they're not. A lot of comics are not about it. They're come on. Right.
Secondly, no, I mean, I've had glimpses of success. You know, I've been the last comic or Tonight Show. People come out of the woodwork. All of a sudden, people you haven't seen in 8-9 years. Like, hey, man, so proud of you.
People went to high school with, they're kind of like, hey, man, when are we going to get – I'm like, the fuck were you? And I was looking through quarters through my fucking – my, you know, when I literally – I remember literally driving to San Diego to do a gig. I had enough money to get gas to San Diego and not enough money to get back. I had no money for gas. And I had to, like, sell – I had to sell DVDs and stuff. But if I go, if I don't sell any DVDs, I can't get back. I don't know how the fuck I'm going to get back. Like, if I have a bad set, like – I would still be in San Diego right now. You know, like
years later,
like he never came back. Where'd he go? I think see, the thing is, I've known you from the times when you were getting Last Comic Standing and all that good stuff in the Tonight Show. But I seen your work ethic, so I knew that anyway it goes, you're gonna be okay. Like yeah. I know, because I know my work ethic, and I could tell. And the reason I wanted to find out. McCorkle, you said it. It's just like the reason that comedy is so much better than fighting is something about me when I was doing that, I actually enjoyed being hit. And I know that sounds fucking psychotic, but if I didn't get hit hard, I wouldn't get going, if that makes sense. I don't know
yeah,
if
that's it does, yeah.
retarded, but like if somebody hit me, then I'd be like, oh, okay, now motherfucker's gone.
The reason that comedy I think is easier than fighting is because if I have a bad night, let's say I bomb, fucking horrendous, right? The next night, though, I could actually do a show, you know, the next night. Whereas if you have a bad night and you get knocked out, sometimes you got to wait 6 months for another fight. And in that 6 months is when you got the depression happens or this or that. It's the fact. And then also, it's like anything else. Like, you know, you can't, if you're any advice, people listening, you can't let your highs get too high. You can't get your lows too low, and you can't give a fuck about all the other people, because what happens is, like, a lot of people get depressed after they win. You're like, wait, but you won, because you're like so high, and all of a sudden you're not. And as a comic, sometimes when I open for Russell Peters, or maybe a bad example for the hotel, but sometimes you do like 5,000 people, and everyone's like, ah, and the laughter's going through you, and it's like fucking heroin. It's like, you're like, this is the greatest. I don't want to get off stage. My life will not be as good when I leave the stage. 1 foot off is not as good. And then that laughter, it's like going through. You're looking down and people are crying and their eyes are wide. They're like, oh my God. And then an hour later, 2 hours later, you can't sleep because you're up from the rush. And I'm at the Motel 6 and there's roaches everywhere. And I'm staying in some shitty fucking place. And then I turn on the TV and I see these whack ass comedians on the Tonight Show or whoever. No, like, and then you go on the internet and everybody on your fucking Facebook face is like, just booked the fucking blah, 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 and just did that, and my life is great, and I just closed up my first house. And you're like, what the fuck? You're like, well, what do I, and I can't sleep, and now I'm depressed, and I miss that love. And you get that fucking lull of like, get me back on stage, get me back on, like that's hard. That's fucking.
But you don't think that, well, after you did Last Comic Standing, which was awesome, it's fucking awesome, and you made it all the way to that round. I mean, but you know what? I think that, okay, this is gonna sound corny, and don't nobody make fun of me. Nobody, when you fucking listen to this, don't you inbox me. I totally, that shit all went away. That feeling of, oh fuck, I'm hot. As soon as I started, I would kick it with my sons. For some reason, we love watching Transformers. Transformers is a shit, by the way. Don't
fuck yeah.
Whoever can make fun of me, I still like Transformers, and I'm a grown man. It would go away.
No,
I would feel
1,000,000%. Since I've had a child, I honestly, like an hour before this, I was in the, we have a garage with a bounce house with my wrestling room that I converted, has a bounce house. And my kids in there, the two friends, they're jumping around and I'm playing like the Party Freeze dance song and they're laughing and I'm like, I don't ever want to leave. This is the greatest. This is the best. This is better than anything. And so getting a hug from my daughter is that's better than that. And I understand, like, Sean, you actually gave up WWE, right? They wanted you in a...
Yeah, I had a contract offer, a really good one from them, but they said you got to be on the road 300 nights a year. And I was like, can I do it like half as many for half the money? And they were like, no. I said, what about like half as many nights for a quarter of the money? And they were like, no, it's... Everybody has to do the same schedule except Brock. He's the only one that gets a special schedule. And I said, I'm not going to be away. I talked to Kevin Nash, the original Big Sexy, about it. And I said, man, I actually saw him at an event, was talking to him. And I said, would you do it if you were me? I've got an offer. He said, well, how's your body? You healthy? I was like, no, I got a real bad back. He said, well, that's strike one, you know? And he said, what about, he said, like, you got kids? I said, yeah, I got a little boy and a little girl. And he asked me how old, you know, I think at the time they were maybe 14 and 11, you know, or something. And he said, man, I'll tell you this. He said, I've spent so many years on the road, however years it was. He goes, I'd wake up in hotels in the middle of the night, not even know what country I was in because we were doing a worldwide tour and everything looks the same after a while. And he said, I have a son that hates my guts, a wife I barely know. And he goes, yeah, and I got a $2 million house on a lake and all this and that. He said, but when I'm home, you know, I'm either fighting with my son or fighting with my wife or whatever. Not to put his dirty laundry out there, but he said, my kids are, you know, my son's resentful because I was never there. You know, he said, my wife, we, you know, have trouble because I was always, you know, running around doing whatever. And he said, I wouldn't do it for all the money in the world if I was you. He said, but it's up to you. And I lost all interest in that moment, man, when he said that, because that's a guy that already did it, made the money, got it big. And he said, it's not worth all the money in the world's not worth it to him. He wouldn't do it over again if he could. So,
one of the funniest stories, Sean, not to change the topic, was your ex-wife in court. They had to read the text.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Will you
tell that story?
Please tell that story.
All right. So we were ordered by the court to be civil with each other, even in texts and emails, you know? So she would send me the most hateful stuff ever, like just constantly send me hateful stuff, talk just all the time. So one time I had an email from a long time ago where she said, well, I'll tell this part first. So they were going to make me, he goes, be ready to read any text or emails you've sent her. If they were hateful in court, they're going to make you read them out loud in front of the judge and in your, like your email to her out loud. And that sparked my mind when he said that. I was like, okay, so by, you know, reasons she's going to have to read out loud too. So I start scouring through my emails. I've got every email I've ever gotten since 2002 still on my AOL. I'm still on AOL because I'm that old, but still get the chat rooms, the man for man, things like that. No, but so I get on there and I find one when we first split up where she sent me an email that said that you think just because you have a huge dick, you're going to be able to get any girl you want. That's not the way it works, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so my lawyer tells me, I sent that, print that out, and I changed the date it was from 2005, I think, or whatever, 2007. I changed it to like recently, you know, like 5 years, like changed a little date with a Photoshop. And so I print it out and I highlight that part because he told me to highlight anything we want her to read, you know, out loud in court. So when he hands me, they make me read a bunch of shit just where I was like, oh, you're an idiot. Quit being mean to my kids. Things like that. You know what I mean? Like her new last name is Bop, B-O-P-P, but she makes her husband pronounce it Bope. So like whenever she would talk shit to me, I'd be like, I hop not, like H-O-P-P, you know, just to be a dick, you know, whatever. So I would like put stuff like that back to her. So they make me read that, which doesn't make sense. So they're like, now they're going to make her read her stuff. So I put that one on very top and my lawyer hasn't seen it. So he hands her the paperwork. It's highlighted. He goes, would you read the highlighted portion for me? He goes, this is you speaking to your ex-husband, correct? And she's like, yes. She looks at the email address and says, yeah, I guess so. And she said, would you read the highlighted portion? And she said, you think because you have a huge dick, you're going to be able to get any girl you want. That's not the way it works. And my lawyer looks at me like, you son of a bitch. Like, you, like looking back, that's the one you put on top. And I just like, it was my only goal to get it on public record that in her expert opinion, I have a huge pee-pee. So that was
what did
you know,
the judge it's
in, say? Somewhere on the public record somewhere.
Were people laughing?
I laughed. I don't know. It was ridiculous, man. Like it was the funniest. Her lawyer kept insinuating I was gay, and I kept insinuating her lawyer was homophobic because she was trying to make me mad, right? So she was like, it says here you travel to wrestle to Lafayette 3 days a week. What's that? I said, I go wrestle with Purdue's wrestling team. She goes, why would you do that? I said, well, because I fight for a living. I wrestle. She goes, so you probably like wrestling with little boys, huh? And I was like, yes. I just went ahead and went with it. Like, okay, yes. And she goes, you do like wrestling with little boys, right? I was like, yeah, it's easier than men. And she was sitting there, she kept saying stuff, and I was like, is there something wrong with that? Like, it seems like you're a little homophobic. Like, I just kept, like, you know, like saying stuff back to her, no matter what she said. At one point, she asked me if I was an accountant. I just said, yes. Like, you know what I mean, or whatever. I just go with whatever she went. Because she asked me if I ever cheated on my taxes before. I said, yes. And she goes, when? I said, in 2005, my brother bought my business from me, gave me $100,000 cash down payment. I didn't report that on my taxes. My ex-wife, we were married at the time, she knows about it because she didn't report on her taxes either. That's how you know about it.
Oh, wow.
And the lawyer's like, oh, really? I wonder if the IRS would like to know about that. And I said, actually, it's been 8 years. The IRS has a statute of limitations of 7 years. So it really doesn't matter what the IRS thinks about it right now, to be honest with you. And like, I just had her at every turn, man. I just smoked her. It was so funny.
Wow.
But yeah, she couldn't outsmart me. Just kept insinuating I was gay. It was the funniest thing ever.
That's a bro.
You know, one time they were trying to get me. She asked me if I had a Rolex. And I said, yes, I do. How did you get a Rolex? I said, oh, my mom gave it for me for my birthday 1 year. And she was like, okay, so when did she give it to you? And I was like, I don't remember. You have no idea when you got a $20,000 watch. I was like, it's not a $20,000 watch, but no, I don't remember. She goes, give me a ballpark. And I was like, well, and my ex-wife's husband, or new husband, family, everybody's there, right? I was like, well, it was right before she cheated me. Or I said, right after I bought her fake boobs in Beverly Hills and right after she cheated on me the second time. So probably 2004, I think. I'm not sure. And it was the most embarrassing. Everybody was just like, holy shit, like in the courtroom. It was so great.
So Adam Carolla is trending right now. Did you guys see what happened today?
What happened?
What did he say?
He says, turns out the people dying from COVID are old or sick or both. How many of you pussies got played? And who's going to get played the next time?
Oh, goodness.
McCorkle, thoughts?
I said countdown to him saying he got hacked, but probably not. Corolla's, I actually know him a little bit, man. He's always been really nice to me. He's got some balls. I don't know how he's still making it in Hollywood out there with his political views. I thought they would have ran him out of town by now, man.
Well, he's not really making it in Hollywood. He makes it on the podcast, which is...
podcast is big, but that's it.
Is that all he does anymore?
His podcast is huge. He also does, like, a live show, you know, travels with a live show. He's always been really nice to me, too.
I never met him.
But even if everyone is sick or old, we still have to look out for those people. I mean, it's not like... like, fuck those people, you know? And if you can give them that, I have my own thoughts on this. I don't know the answer. That's my thoughts. I don't know. Depending on who you read, people say 6% only died from COVID, everyone else is something else. But then you go, well, what are the other things? I'm not a doctor. I know McCorkle, you think everyone should just go about their business, right? And you refuse to wear a mask?
No, I will not wear a mask, man. Not under any, unless, to be honest, if an old person, if it made them like nervous or something, I would do it for them just to be nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But as far as my own safety, I don't buy any of it. I think there's something so much bigger behind all this. We'll probably never know. I don't know if they thought it was a biological attack and we really were in danger. I don't know if it's a test run for if we do get biologically attacked. I don't know if it's to get Trump out of office. I don't know, like something to do this worldwide, something huge.
Get Trump out of office.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. That's what a lot of people say. Like,
that's a dumb theory. Trump fucks up Trump. Trump says dumb shit that fucks himself up. He doesn't need COVID.
Saying the reason that doesn't make sense is because it's worldwide. That doesn't affect Trump. Like, it's. I just think there's some. I have always believed there's bigger powers than the president, than whatever running this world, man. Like, I don't know if it's the Antichrist somewhere. I don't know if it's the Rothschild family. I don't know, like, what. I just think there's people behind the scenes moving things around and. I don't know what – there's something way bigger – because I know for sure the government doesn't care about our health. That's what I'm convinced of. So
of course not.
I don't believe it's – and it goes from we just got to keep the – flatten the curve, keep from overrunning the hospitals, and they find out nobody's in the hospital. Well, we got to do this. We got to do that. My perspective is a little different too. My girlfriend is an epidemiologist. She got her master's in epidemiology and infectious disease. So she can read all the CDC charts and understands. And she said from the beginning, a mask isn't going to protect you from anything, not a virus. You know what I mean anyway? Doesn't protect you. The H1 mask or whatever that thing is will protect you, but no one else because it leaves out your, you know, like whatever you're breathing out still goes in the air. And she said from the beginning, she asked her boss, who is one of the top people at CDC or was one of the top people, said the masks are ridiculous. It's not going to protect anybody from anything. It's insanity. Even Dr. Fauci was on film saying the masks don't work. They don't protect you in March. And then he changes his mind. But I don't know. I've heard 1,000 theories on what it is. We'll probably never know, but it just doesn't. The whole thing, man, it seems like, I don't know, maybe I'm the only one that feels, I feel like the whole world is changing massively over the past few months, man. Like, everything has just shifted. Like, weird. Everything's weird, man.
I agree
with 100% of that. Now, I don't know. I don't know the answers. I know I have to just keep, I know you have to keep being funny, putting out comedy. Yeah. Being entertaining, doing our own best. And obviously I wear a mask because, not because I'm a sheep, because if it makes people feel safer, I'll wear the mask. You know, I think also one of the best things you can do is take care of your body though, and your health.
Yeah.
Just in general, you know, so it seems like people that are out of shape or eating like the worst. And I'm a hypocrite. I eat like shit too, but at least I work out. Of course, you're going to have problems regardless of COVID or not, you know?
Right.
So, Weendog, what are your thoughts on this? Adam Carolla's statement.
On Carolla's thing? I thought this was stuff we already have known for like the past 6 months, that old people and people with underlying health conditions are the ones most susceptible. I don't see anything wrong with what he's saying. If this is just in regards to the new CDC statement saying that only 9% of the total of 180,000, 170,000 deaths are actually from COVID, I think that has to really be taken into consideration when we're locking down states in the entire country. Because is it really worth, you know, ruining the state's economy, costing people their jobs for, you know, 9,000 actual deaths from the virus? It's just, and if you want to look at it that way, then go ahead. Or if you want to look at it like it doesn't matter if only 9,000 people, even if you have, you know, maybe if you're diabetic or whatever, you know, you still can get this and die. But I don't know. I believe in what Sean was saying, that the world is actually run by like reptilian aliens. I don't believe that the politicians actually run anything. I think this is the game of politics and, you know, idolizing politicians. I think that's just,
you really believe that reptilian aliens run the world for real?
Not like just a higher power, not like a spiritual power, but like an occultist power, like a evil cult, like the Illuminati or something, or the Freemasons, something like that. That has to be who is actually running the world.
That has to be.
It has to be.
Yeah, 100%. Because this stuff is just way too calculated, you know.
Shang, your thoughts?
Well, I know that 2 days ago I had to fight off a reptilian to get the last piece of toilet paper. I know that that's part of their plan too. To go after the toilet paper so, well, none of us can wipe our ass and the reptiles win. No, I just think, I don't think it is a giant conspiracy. I think that sometime nature goes, ah, fuck y'all. You know what? You're messing up the earth, fuck y'all. And humans are incompetent and we're tribal, and that's why we're fucking up. And that's it. And they say, well, old people are sick people. Okay, what if your father's old, you Adam Carolla, you silly bitch? And what, so fuck him, because he's old? Only old people. Well, he's old. Or what if you got sick and you're young? What happens then? So fuck the sick people, because sick people get better. So, but fuck them. Okay, so what Adam Carolla is saying is basically the same shit Trump does. You play to your base, you make where you can get your money and where you can get your most people following you and blah, blah, blah. And that's it. A lot of people are about tribalism instead of realism. And that is what it is. I mean, it's like I deal with it all the time, but I have a tendency to just go move forward, but some people can't. Some people can't just move forward. I just feel like, you know, some people are going to get caught into the web of bullshit. And the bullshit is sometimes nature, viruses, colds, fuck you up. That's it. And why couldn't this be one of those cases? Instead of, well, it's a conspiracy. Now, the Rothschilds, they definitely are doing a lot of dirt. I agree with you.
Right. What are you blaming the Jews for? So everyone blames the Jews. Everybody, it's always the Jews. It's always the Jews.
The one thing I want to say, like, we have to draw a line somewhere, man, because if the COVID thing, okay, we got to keep everybody safe. Well, then make all the speed limits 10 miles an hour worldwide. Because no one will ever die from another car wreck if the speed limits are 10 miles an hour. They're not, because we can't function and operate a society with 10 miles an hour. We can, it'll just kill all the economy or whatever. And then it's like, well, you know what? Then we have to do, everybody needs to stay safe all the time because a different flu bug can kill us. Then, I mean, where do you draw the line to where you say, well, cigarettes need to be illegal because people are dying from that, including secondhand smoke. And the people aren't dying have to pay taxes to pay for the people who don't have insurance that have like lung disease. It's like, at what point, how many, like they say you can't put a price on a, like human life. Well, I know that 70 miles an hour, what, 100,000 people die in car crashes every year. If we took that to 10 miles an hour, you would save all 70,000 of those people, or 100,000, whatever it is, of those people if we take it to 10 miles an hour. So why not do that? Why not make all like Coke and soda, Sprite is killing people. Let's make it, you can only drink water because that's what's better for you. We can't save people. You know, people are being diabetic. You know, it's bad for kids. Let's get rid of that. I mean, at some point you have to draw a line where you say, that's life. You know what I mean? Like you are going to get sick. People are going to die. And it's like, kind of like Shang said on nature, sometimes nature does weed out the weak. And as sad as that is, that's the truth. You know, I mean, the old dude died.
You think it's the unknown element of it though? Because we didn't really know about the virus versus like,
well, I think they probably thought it was going to be way worse than it is. But I also believe that everyone is going to use it. Like, okay, maybe it wasn't brought about to get rid of Trump, but the Democrats are for sure going to try to use it to get rid of Trump. The Republicans are going to try to use it to keep him in office, whatever way they can spend it. You're not going to be safe if Trump's not, you know, president, and then, you know, you're going to die if he is. But everybody, I think what Shane was saying, I mean, to a degree, there is you can't control everything because there is random things that happen, nature, whatever. But everybody seizes on it and tries to spin it to you, to their benefit. And it's just like, I think everybody saw a chance to locking down. I mean, I don't know if you know, Adam, because you're from New York originally. Have you seen what's happened in New York? Like, everybody's gone. The streets are empty. Manhattan is.
Dude, Los Angeles is right behind it. You drive around LA right now, every business is closed.
It's insane, man.
Tents everywhere. I mean, I wanted to take my kid to the park yesterday. We couldn't go to the park. I mean, not that I'm scared of homeless people, but the entire park is homeless people, and they shut off the fountains, and you can't go on the slide or anything. And I'm because that's the playground's out. Like, there's, it's not an ideal place to live right now. Is Los Angeles? I mean, wow. Listen. I hope all the comics leave LA, so it's just me and Shang left to do all the spots.
You hope all the comics leave, and Brendan Schaub also.
Yeah. Go ahead.
He's not a comic.
You guys want to go to Austin, Texas? Go.
I heard him saying the other day, I've always wanted to live in Austin. It's weird that Joe moved there because that's always been my dream. I was like, oh yeah, unbelievable.
So. Is that what he said? Really?
He's like, it's always been my dream to move to Austin.
Oh, yeah.
But I agree with you, and I agree with Adam. I think that the bottom line is, you know, some shit you just don't know. He says, I don't know. So sometimes I accept I don't know, but I do know when they are spinning it, and I do know when I see somebody say to me that I saw the president say that they're going to come to the suburbs and they're going to make your houses bad and to lean it towards this people of color. Like,
you're talking about the rioting? Is that what you're
saying? No, not just the rioting. He said because low-income housing is going to be pushed out to the suburbs and all that other stuff, and people of color are going to come out there. And
I'm like, great. I'm like, fuck it. I can finally afford to buy a house.
Yeah, I mean, it's just silly.
Sean, you're defending the Kenosha shooter, right?
I am?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I saw a video, if the video is true, where the guy tried to throw a Molotov cocktail at him and try to hit him with it, I would shoot you in the face if you did that to me. And the other guy hit him with the skateboard, and the other guy had a gun pulled on him. He shot both of them. If you hit me with the skateboard, I'll shoot you. And if you try to pull a gun on me, I'll shoot you. Obviously, he probably shouldn't have been there, you know, and obviously people are saying he was looking for trouble. Probably so. You know, I'm like, he was looking for or whatever. And I hate that it's a 17-year-old kid because I've got an 18-year-old, and he's not. I mean, a year ago, not even now, but certainly not a year ago, he wouldn't be smart enough to be making adult decisions like that, you know, or whatever to do that. But it's, I don't know. Obviously, if it was his property, maybe he shouldn't have been there looking for trouble, whatever. I agree with all that. But you can't blame a kid for those
things. He also had a gun. He also shouldn't have had the gun, right? Isn't it?
Right. Yeah, but there's also a curfew. Those people shouldn't have been out on the street. So there's any number of ways you can look at it. You know,
so they were out late, so they get shot. Yo, first off, I mean, I was with you with the shooting, but the bottom line is some of the video footage shows basically he was out there looking for it. It wasn't like somebody, and they don't have footage of a Molotov cocktail being thrown at him. They show footage of him and the cops condoning him walking around 17-year-old with an illegal weapon. They should have stopped him right then. Wait a minute, how old are you? You're 17. Give me that fucking gun. You shouldn't even be here. But instead, they let him continue to walk around with a gun and continue in a volatile situation.
So I agree with both of you. Is it self-defense? If you're running away from somebody, they're saying that you're no longer the aggressor, the other person is. If the person was throwing things at him, if some people say it was a sandwich, other people say it was a cocktail, other people said there was gunshots at him, but do you agree that it's okay to defend yourself if someone's running at you and you have a gun?
The second, third guy he shot, for sure he had a right to. The first guy, I don't know, because it's not clear video evidence.
There's no footage of the first two.
So we don't know, yeah.
First two that he killed. The third one, yes, that he shot in the arm and basically blew half his arm off. Yeah. But end of the day, okay, if I'm running away and I turn and come back at you and aim and shoot you, can't do that. Can't do that. Just like you can't do that. If I'm walking away from you and you're two cops, there's two cops and I'm walking away from you, don't have a gun, don't have a knife, you can't shoot me in the back.
What about if the person was trying to grab his gun?
Now, the person that was trying to grab his gun, if he was trying to grab his gun, then that's different. But there's no footage and there's
tons of witnesses. I'm talking about not just protesters. I mean, people that are, like, you would think would be on his side are like, dude kind of was there to shoot people.
His mom dropped him off.
No, come on, Shane. Come on, dude.
His mom drove him there.
Dude, he was there all day cleaning graffiti off of businesses, providing medical assistance to people on Black Lives Matter and people opposing Black Lives Matter. And if you look at the video, the dude was chasing him with a pistol. He shot the dude in the arm who was holding a pistol. He later said, I wish I would have shot and killed him. The other dude was attacking with a skateboard.
That was the third guy, though. The first guy wasn't in that pistol, did he?
Nope.
No, the first guy was a pedophile, though, so that worked out great.
The first guy was a pedophile and
was screaming the N-word. Did
you see the look on the black guy's faces when he's dropping the N-bomb, the white guy that got shot? He's like, come at me, nigga. Like saying that, and you see the guys, the black guys looking at him like, dude, what? I know you're on our side, but come on, dude. Like, it takes some balls, man.
Wayne, you're saying he wasn't there to shoot people? Okay. Then guess what? Come there with a brush and scrub the fucking shit off. Don't come there with an AR.
Well, not both. You know how many Black Lives Matter people are out there with weapons? They just killed a Trump supporter for no reason in Oregon.
Black Lives Matter. It wasn't just Black Lives Matter. They said the bulk of the people that have been causing the conflict that were from other cities, and they weren't black. What are you talking about? They weren't even Black Lives Matter people that were even involved with Black Lives Matter. It was people there to make chaos, and the chaos in turn serves the person that they're voting for. And that is a fact. It is that. And if this kid was not there to shoot people, and he was just there for peace and to scrub and to help Black Lives Matter, don't bring an AR, motherfucker.
Are you saying the chaos is there to help Biden?
No. The chaos will help Trump. And I mean,
so Antifa wants to help Trump?
No. Antifa is number one. It's not an organization. It's not an organization like the Panthers or something like that. The Antifa's not. Look it up. It's just what is not.
I don't know. They seem pretty organized and pretty crazy.
Oh, they seem pretty organized, pretty crazy, and the white nationalists don't. But the point is,
they do also. Both can be true.
The point is, Antifa. No, these were people that got video footage of them in trucks shooting people with marbles out of paint guns. It was not Black Lives Matter shooting at people in
Trump. But Antifa is aligned with getting Trump. They hate Trump. Antifa,
bad or good or not, it's not in the same ballpark as the shit that's going on against. Antifa are agitators. They're agitators, absolutely. But they are in no comparison to people walking with fucking tiki torches and
Antifa's burning stuff down too. They're all terrible.
But there, a lot of them. But what I'm saying is, what the perception is that the protesters and rioters are the same thing. Rioters are
No. I think
that's the problem everybody's run into. It really is the problem because there's a lot of Black Lives Matter people who genuinely are out there, good people protesting. And then it's really, be honest with you, I keep seeing the white people do it. The white people coming out there, the Antifa or whatever, they want to incite stuff, want to burn shit. And it's like, that it gets thrown in, well, look what Black Lives Matter did, the same way Hitler was a Christian, you know what I mean? Or whatever, like I'm a Christian, you know, like this and that. Like, you can throw your name in there. Like if I say I'm for Black Lives Matter and go kill somebody, that doesn't mean I speak for them. So yeah. I really wish that Black Lives Matter would form form legitimately a political party and have like a leader or whatever, and then put their platform out and like really unify so they can get their point across, as opposed to everybody would just be able to claim they're part of Black Lives Matter.
Right. You know,
like I speak for Black Lives Matter, and we're gonna riot and burn this whole city down. Like, don't, you know what I mean? Like, you don't speak for all those people if you aren't put in position to speak for them. So that's what I hate about it, is you've got to, I don't know, it's like the KKK speaking for all white people or all Trump supporters, you
exactly.
know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, like it's not.
I don't think all KKK. And Ween, what I was saying is, if this kid was there about peace, because there was a lot of people that didn't come with ARs, they came from other cities or from that actual place, were helping clean off walls, helping clean stuff up. They were trying to heal. This motherfucker showed up with an AR, and if you look at his Facebook and his fucking Instagram, he said, bruh, I want to be famous. They show footage of him practicing shooting. They show footage of him doing all kind of weird shit. So the reason that he got charged, he didn't get allegedly charged, he flat out got charged with murder, is because of the stuff they saw in his background. And his mother dropping him off doesn't help his fucking case.
What, your mom wouldn't drop you off to a rally?
Your mom is not supposed to drop you off with an AR nowhere.
Come on. Yeah. Like, back when I was going.
Son, we don't live here. Don't go over there protecting shit that you don't own. Son, bring the AR back in the house.
Yeah, that's kind of.
Parents supposed to do.
The Ween Dog, you think he's going to get off?
Yeah, I mean, he for sure is underage and shouldn't be carrying, an AR-15. Even though Wisconsin has very loose open carry laws, which, you know, he would have been fine if he was of age. But he will get off of the murder charges because he did act in self-defense. And he probably might get time because I don't know if he's legally an adult in Wisconsin or wherever it is. But he will for sure face some repercussions from this. But he's not going to go away for murder charges.
No, he's not going to go away for murder charges. No, I don't think so. But again, his mom dropping him off. And if anything, I think his mom is part of it too. It's like, you're not supposed to do that with your fucking kids. You're supposed to keep your kids in the house. And yeah, they didn't live anywhere near there. Actually, he lived about 35 to 40 minutes away. So he purposely came over there. He purposely was walking the streets. If you just came to clean during the day, clean up the shit, go back home. Don't come back
outside. All I know is my cleaning lady has an AR-15 all the time with her. So when she comes to the house to clean up, she carries an AR-15.
But that makes sense.
Can you imagine dropping your kid off like, honey, have fun. Don't shoot too many people. Like, keep it in the reason. Goodbye.
The crazy part is that he went home that night.
See you on the news.
Didn't he go home that night and sleep in his bed?
I don't know.
I know that the cops gave them water and condoned it. The cops, if they saw me walking with an AR and they didn't stop me, I'd be like, you're not a good cop. You're supposed to stop me and say something. If any, you're not supposed to, hey, you want some water? Are you thirsty? That's what I'm saying. It's that double standard bullshit.
You don't think this is part of the cops trying to reach out to the community? They're saying the cops are supposed to be better friends with the community. So maybe they were just trying to say, hello, how's it going? How's your AR?
I think the cops know they can't do anything. So they're all four people shooting them up. You know what I mean? Because the cops can't do anything. But that isn't true to a degree, though, because in Atlanta, I saw videos in Atlanta about 300 black dudes with some serious machine guns walking around Atlanta, and nobody was bothering them at all. Like, they were just
the no fucking around crew. No fucking around coalition. And it
cracks me up. People put a picture of that on Facebook. Like, if this bothers you, but this doesn't, like two white guys holding guns, then whatever. I'm like, why would that bother me? Like, a black guy? Like, I don't get it.
They were adults. They were ex-military. The no fucking around coalition is adults. Number one, they're adults. They're ex-military. It was 1,500 of them, and they marched to keep the people safe from Klan rallies that were happening. Because before that, the Klansmen or the white nationalists beat the shit out of two people, and they beat the shit out of a mixed couple. There was a mixed couple just walking down the street. They beat the shit out of them. So after that, they said, listen, we're not going to shoot anybody, but we're not going to make sure that you don't do nothing. Wow. That's what they were there for. No other reason. And if you notice, nothing popped off. Nobody shot anybody. Nobody. Two people weren't killed and one person wasn't shot. So why is it that 1,500 men, black men, grown men, military men, can walk with AR-15s and walk and nobody gets shot, but a 17-year-old who's underage, shouldn't have had the gun, went there, should have left after he cleaned some shit up and went back home, and yet he was out mixing it up at night. And
no, I think if the no fucking around zone, they should go to fucking Wisconsin. You know,
a friend of mine, they need to go on tour.
They need to go on tour. Like, it's just why are they only in Atlanta? They gotta
turn them into a band.
Atlanta, DC. They're coming out here, and a friend of mine told me about that. They're coming out here, and they're gonna go to different places. And again, they're not.
Are you gonna join them? I mean, you have a gun, right?
No.
You don't have a gun?
No, I don't have a gun.
Wow, how come?
He loaned it to some kid in Wisconsin, I heard.
Yeah. His mom came and took him to a rally. Yeah, that sounds safe. Go to the Black Lives rally with an AR, son. You'll have so much fun.
McCorkle, how many guns do you have, Sean?
20 to 25, probably.
Really?
Yeah, I got I used to have more, but I sold a couple of them. Yeah, over more than 20, for sure.
Is somebody invading your house?
I expect the police at any moment. But
why do you have 20 to 25 guns?
Yeah, I bought my first gun when I was 12. My mom was dropping me off at a rally. No, I just always been a collector. My dad died. He left me a lot of guns. I had probably 12 or 15 already, and he had like 10. It just like I've got shotguns. I got AR-15s. I got a couple machine guns. I got Glock, Beretta 9mm. I keep in my car. I don't really go anywhere without a gun anymore because I can't fight anymore. With my back being hurt. So I still want to be right all the time. So I just have a gun with me. And I found you can still be right if you got a gun.
Yeah.
I do have a funny story. Don't let me forget to tell you about the German. It's a funny story about the German.
Before we leave, I hear this German. But hold on, Weedog, how many guns do you have, Weedog?
I just have my sniper rifle. It's not a good home defense gun, but it will do the job.
Okay, so what's this German story?
Okay, so me and my girlfriend are out to eat the other night, right? And we're actually at a German restaurant, and we're sitting there, and it's real quiet. Nobody's wearing masks, as they shouldn't. And we're sitting there, and it's so funny. Every time we come in, like, sure, do you have a mask? I'm like, no, thanks. Like, I don't understand. I just walk in without it. So we're sitting there, and it's all quiet, and all of a sudden we hear from this table about 12 people. This guy goes, I'm not even German, and everybody starts dying laughing. So that's apparently the punchline to his joke. As opposed to a Brendan Shaw punchline, which is just, what the fuck? Like, that's every punchline. Have you seen this R. Kelly video? What the fuck, right? That's his punchline. But anyway, so this guy says, I'm not even German. And everyone at the table they're like spilling their drinks, laughing. It's the funniest joke ever. So I started theorizing what could the setup have possibly been to that joke to make it funny. You know what I mean? Like, he'd be like, it turns out I'm eating this German sausage, and I ordered only that, and the waitress, brings it over. I'm not even German, and I was like, that's not very funny. And then I was thinking, this guy comes up to me at the airport. He starts talking to me because he sees the outfit I'm wearing, and he's speaking German. I'm not even German. And so then I was like, I kept theorizing what could have been so funny. And the only one I thought of that could have possibly been funny is him being like, so it turns out I'm working at Auschwitz as a guard, right? For years, we're exterminating people. Then I find out I'm not even German. Like, I don't know.
That's not a bad joke.
I could think of. And my girlfriend thought that was really funny when I was trying to come up with
it. I thought maybe there was like I was online to blow Hasselhoff, and I was like, I'm not even sure.
Right. did I tell you about when I got stopped at the airport in Germany and I started claiming to be a Jew? That was so great.
What happened?
I go to Germany to get my back supposedly fixed from that doctor, the one that treats all the famous people. So I go there, and they tell me when I get to Chicago, your passport only has 60 days left on it. You can't go to Germany. And I was like, no, I paid like $15,000 for a procedure. And if I don't show up, I don't get my money. I have to go to Germany. Well, you can't go. And you have to have at least 90 days left on your passport. You'll have to go a different time. I was like, ma'am, you don't understand. I've been waiting 6 months for this procedure. It's prepaid. If I don't show, I don't get my money back. I have to go. Well, I don't know what to tell you. So I almost like start crying because I'm like, I can't believe this. I thought my back pain's about to be over, waited 6 months for this doctor, prepaid everything, like all this different stuff. And so she goes, I keep saying, you don't understand how important this is. So she calls a manager. They said, well, we could probably send you through Poland and then from Poland to Germany because they won't check in Poland. They're not very bright there. And I was like, what the hell is that supposed to mean? And she goes, no, I didn't mean it like that. I meant there are people that work there. I was like, oh, I know what you meant. So I could defend her, right? But
yeah.
So she sends me to Poland first. They don't check my passport or check my ID. Sends me to Germany. They don't check anything when I get there because it's from one European country to another. So as I start to walk out, I'm asking this Australian guy who comes to Germany all the time. I sat next to him on the plane, apparently. He comes to Germany all the time. And I told him, I said something about not having euros. I said, do I need euros over here? They take dollars. He's like, dude, where do you think you're going? You absolutely need euros. And I was like, well, in every other country, they always take dollars. He goes, this ain't Mexico, I'm talking to him, like, where can I get dollars? I'm trying to like talk to her. Where can I get euros? Talking to him. And so we get out there, and I said, hey, will these guys speak English here? He's like, no, you're in Germany. Like, he's in Dusseldorf. They're like, and I was like, well, how do I even get a cab? I'm trying to figure out how to get to the hotel, this and that. And so this cop sees me, like, talking to dude a bunch, seeing like maybe unsure of myself, and he comes over and wants to see my passport out of nowhere. Comes walking over, wants to see my passport. And I know if he sees it, I'm not getting in, past the thing. He's going to stop me. And so, like, I'm panicking, like, oh, my gosh, he's not going to let me in. I'm not going to be able to be there tomorrow. The appointment's in, like, 12 hours. So he comes over. He goes, he starts speaking. I'm like, I don't speak German. I'm not even German, though. So he starts, like, trying to talk to me. And I was like, I don't know. He keeps saying passport, passport. And I'm like, I don't understand. And so he shows someone, like, at the other guy's points at his passport and see mine. And I'm like, oh, you need to see my papers? Is that what it is? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you could see my papers. I said, that's because I'm Jewish. I said, I'm Jewish. Is that what this is about? And he goes, oh, no. I said, no, let me get my papers for you, Fuhrer, like that or whatever. No I said, way. Hold on a second. And I started throwing a fit. I was like, unbelievable. 2017 or 18, I have to deal with this stuff because I'm a Jew. And the guy's like, oh, it's okay. It's okay. He goes, walk away. Like the cop or whatever. I was sweating, dude. Like, I'm not kidding you. I was absolutely like just I was thinking they're going to stop me, not let me in. And now I got all this close. I'm 5 miles from the doctor. I can't get my procedure. So,
nothing like German stuff.
Yeah. I'm going to use
it. I am a quarter Jewish, though, so I'm allowed to make jokes.
Of course, of course. Listen, people.
I'm going to use that next time a cop pulls me over.
Just telling you, you're not even driving
me because I'm a Jew? What the heck? Is that why you're doing it? Because I'm a Jew?
Yeah, that's a hell of a Jewish accent.
Yeah, yeah, you're really Jewish. Like,
that was super Jewish. I had to put the voice there to make it like that. No, but no, you know what? I think that the thing is, when we talk about this, because Adam gets a kick out of seeing people. He's a weirdo. He's a fucking weirdo. But it's weird because anytime we mention anything pertaining to mask or Trump or whatever else, the whole conversation, yeah, man, that was a good fight. It was a good double leg. And then all of a sudden we go, yeah, but what about Trump? I'm like, what does that have to do? And Ween has a fucking sniper gun. That's scaring the shit out of me. I'm on here with Ween, and Ween is, not only does he have a fucking black, dark funeral parlor behind him or whatever the fuck.
It's a graveyard.
Well, yeah, it's a graveyard, and you have a sniper gun. He has such a nice looking kid.
McCorkle has 25 guns.
But that's different. I'm talking about McCorkle. That makes sense. You're a nice kid.
I went through a hunting phase where I wanted to go hunting, but it's really hard to go hunting when you live in Los Angeles.
She wanted you to like put a gun to her head when you had sex with her.
Yeah, a Tinder date was kind of freaky. She wanted me to put a gun to her head. Love making, but you know that is yeah. But turns out I did want to go hunting. But that never happened.
On a date after all, she didn't even know they had a date. But you know.
How about here you go, Adam. Oh. There it is.
What is that?
That's right.
AR-14.
It's my AR-15.
Wow. But what sniper? How do you go hunting with a sniper gun? What are you picking off deer from fucking rooftop? Deer.
Yeah, well, because they run away. They're very skittish if you get too close. You have to shoot them from far away or wild boar. You know.
Yeah, because you know the deer.
How many deer are there in Burbank?
No, that's why I haven't gone hunting. You have to travel like an 8-hour drive to some farm or something to go shoot pigs in California or in Southern California.
Adam, have you been
hunting? Hunting trip is for Wisconsin, I heard. His mom's going to drop him off.
Adam, have you been hunting before?
No.
He said no.
No, absolutely not.
Whatever you hunt, you have to eat.
I probably start crying and shit. Anyway. You guys have been a lot of fun. Thank you for everything. Have a great week. McCorkle, you're the best. Shang, you're the best.
You guys, be careful out there.
Take care, guys. Be good.
I'm not even German.